Welcome to Nashville and Beyond.
I'm Brian Copeland.
And I'm Zach Copeland.
And we're a father-son duo helping people buy, sell, and thrive in Middle Tennessee.
But this isn't just about business. It's also about our family and our community.
It's a front row seat to how we live, work, and serve right here in Music City.
So buckle up as we explore Nashville and Beyond.
Better than Christmas at our house right now because it's Halloween time.
It is.
And you know, the little brother and sister love some Halloween.
They do.
Micah said, can we get out? Can we put up our skeleton? And I'm like, sure. But he's got to get it out. So it's still not out yet.
Oh,
so
wow.
And once he gets it out, it's good. So
Well, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. I love your gown.
Thank you. Gowns. Beautiful gowns. Beautiful gowns. That's an Aretha Franklin reference. She was given an interview. And they were asking her about different pop stars. And they mentioned Mariah. And she was like, oh, beautiful voice, amazing voice. Christina Aguilera, incredible superstar, great powerhouse. And then they said Taylor Swift. And Aretha Franklin goes, gowns, beautiful gowns.
Well, and those who aren't necessarily watching YouTube today, they don't know that we're dressed for Halloween. Redux kind of. I didn't go as full out as you did.
Well,
but for those not watching, I am wearing my Winnie the Pooh shirt and my Winnie the Pooh cap. I love Winnie the Pooh. It's been my love since I was little. It goes back to a story with. I'll tell that story in a second. Let's talk about your outfit.
Well, I'm just dressed as a generic Jedi. I have the tunic and the belt and the cloak and the shirt and all those things. And, I'm not necessarily a big Star Wars fan, but I love a good cloak. I've got a collection of cloaks at home from various IPs. And yeah.
You know, we've started the Christmas Music Force Church, and Esther was like, you know, one of the reasons I want to sing in the choir is I want to wear one of those gowns. So she's been calling the choir robes gowns. I'm like, honey, we're not going to do
gown.
Gowns or robes. But yeah. So yeah, you're not a Star Wars. You like Star Wars, obviously.
But, yeah, I like it. I'm just not a super fan. Yeah, I can't
do all the Lego stuff and everything. But yeah. I am a Winnie the Pooh mega fan.
Yes, you are.
It goes back to when I was like, it's one of my earliest memories. When we were at Disney World, Magic Kingdom, when probably I was 3 or 4, I saw Winnie the Pooh early in the day, and it was my mom's first trip to the Magic Kingdom. And okay. Mom was barely out of her teens at that point. So this was a big deal for her to go to. And she always wanted to see the light parade at night. Well, she promised me I'd get that Winnie the Pooh before we left that day. And it came to the end of the day and she'd forgotten it.
Oh.
And so me and Dad and my brother Brad watched the parade. And almost at the end of it, Mom comes up and puts the little Winnie the Pooh in my hand. And she had missed the parade to get me the Winnie the Pooh.
Aww.
And so since then, Winnie the Pooh has always been my staple. That Winnie the Pooh is still in my house. It's in a blue bag. It is decrepit because I slept with it all the time. It went everywhere with me. And it's so poor looking.
Winnie the Goblin.
Yeah. If I can find a photo, if I can get a photo of it, I'll put it on our Instagram so people can see that Winnie the Pooh.
That's awesome.
But I've always just loved Winnie the Pooh. So that's my costume today.
Well, this for me, we took a family trip to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I went to Disney World, and then we took a family trip to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had matching Winnie the Pooh themed shirts.
Yep.
Pooh, I'm Eeyore, Greg is the owl. What's the owl's name?
Owl.
Owl. Oh.
Brilliant. Esther was Piglet, Micah was Tigger.
That's right. That's right. Yep. And it was my first time going to Disneyland, and we went to this Star Wars area. And I forget what the land is called, but while we were there, you know, there's all these kind of gifts and souvenirs that you can buy and take home, and everything from, you know, $40 itty bitty plushes to lightsabers that you can build in this experience that they have, which is really cool. I'll probably do that the next time we go. But yeah, I just wanted something to take home with me to remember that experience and love a good cloak. And so I've got the cloak here. And
what's the one that you bought in the Hollywood Studios Star Wars section? Was that the green one? Or
yeah, that's some security uniform. You can find it on the Disney website on their store. I forget what the name of the character is. Again, I'm not a Star Wars mega fan, super fan, even casual fan.
You just like a good gown.
I just love a good gown. Love, love, love a good gown.
And speaking of good stuff, what's your favorite Halloween candy?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I love...
And your most hated Halloween candy. I want to hear both.
Okay, so my favorite Halloween candy is probably Reese's. I love Reese's. I'm not like going out and buying Reese's for myself, right. Really. I mean, if I've just got like a killer sweet tooth and happen to be walking down that aisle in the grocery store, I may pick it up. But maybe once a year that happens. But Halloween definitely is for me all about Reese's. I love the little miniature Snicker bars. Probably my least favorite Halloween candy, believe it or not, is Dots.
Oh.
Yeah. I had a bad experience with an overcooked Dot.
You cook Dots?
No. It came from the factory overcooked.
Oh. I was like, why are you cooking Dots at your house?
You know, they had the little mini Dot packages that are like the little mini Nerds packages, and there was a Dot in there that was just way overcooked, and it was hard as a rock, and I put it in my mouth and bit down on it and chipped my tooth.
I bet it was a tooth.
And well,
it was like, probably somebody's
maybe tooth. It was somebody left a tooth in there. What about you? What's your favorite Halloween candy?
Well, my favorite, Reese, again, I didn't know that was your favorite. Yeah. But yeah, the Reese cups. There's something special about the little pumpkin ones, and then those Easter egg ones that got a little better peanut butter to chocolate ratio.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Reese's just got sued because the packaging for their Halloween Reese's it's like a pumpkin with a piece of it bit off of. Right. And that's what the logo is on the front of it. And somebody sued them because when they opened up the package, it wasn't bit off of already.
Oh, that's stupid.
And so they lost that lawsuit. But
that's another whole level of stupidity. Yeah.
But what about your least favorite?
My least favorite. You know, obviously candy corn is the stereotype, and that's what I thought you would do. But mine is circus peanuts.
Mm.
And it goes back to when I was trick-or-treating, probably when I was 8 years old. I grew up in a little area called High School, H-E-I-S-K-E-L-L, Tennessee. And we went trick-or-treating just off one of the side hollows there. We showed up at this lady's house who was, you know, a family member several times removed, and she wasn't expecting trick-or-treaters. Mm. And so she went into her cabinet, and she had some of these orange circus peanut marshmallowy things that were stuck to her cabinet. And she peeled them off and put them in our Halloween tin and our Halloween... whatever. And it was just the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten in my life.
I actually love circus peanuts.
Of course you do.
I love circus. The artificial neon orange food coloring.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, so it was a traumatic experience to get that. And I learned, your mom was like, you're not eating unwrapped candy and all that stuff. And, you know, trick-or-treating back then was, you know, so ridiculous how, you know, how we had to dress and all that. So, yeah.
What was your first Halloween costume? Do you remember?
My first Halloween costume, I remember going to King's. If you're from, you know, East Tennessee area, we had a store that was like Kmart, but it was called King's. And back then in the 1970s, they were complete fire hazards, choking hazards, and suffocating. That's the word I'm looking for. Suffocating hazards. So we had these masks that had like two holes in the nose and two holes in the eyes, and that was it.
I'm claustrophobic. I can't do those kind of masks.
And then you had like this glorified garbage bag that you put over and tied in the back. And so that was one of my costumes, but the earliest picture of me, I'm in drag. Yeah.
Wow.
I got no response from you on that one.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm in drag. Brad has got like a hobo because we didn't have a lot of money back then. So mom would take like shoe polish and put on Brad's face and then wear one of Dad's big shirts. And then mom had this old wig and I would put it on. And that's the earliest Halloween photo I have, is me dressed. And that's one of two times I've ever done drag in my life.
I did drag for Halloween as well. That's another story for another day. But yes, my first Halloween costume was as a scarecrow. And we literally got straw and stuffed a shirt full of straw that was already on my body. And it was the itchiest, most uncomfortable costume I had probably ever worn. I was a vampire at one point, and then after a while, we just kind of stopped celebrating Halloween, going out, dressing up, all that kind of stuff. But another thing people talk about during Halloween, and something that we're going to talk about, is haunted houses.
Oh gosh, yeah.
What experiences we've had with haunted houses, both true haunted houses and commercial haunted houses. And you know how that ties in with real estate. So what are some haunted house stories you have?
Well, one of my it's not favorite, but I should say interesting stories is I got a call from a family a few years ago, and they said, and this is crazy, and when you hear it, you're going, what? How does that happen? It was left in the hands of the murdered sister to sell the home that they that she was murdered in. Mm. And the husband, who was the convicted killer, was in prison. Okay? Now, from my understanding, the way this worked is he doesn't get the money, but they don't get the money either. Okay?
Okay.
But it was sitting there accruing tax debt, all those pieces, so they needed to offload it. So she told me, she said, you know, it's a bad situation. They were wonderful. They lived over in Memphis, but the house was in East Nashville. And so when I went in, I called my dad, Virgil, and said, will you go with me? So we went in, we put Vicks vapor rub under our noses because I was told that it was unbelievable. We walk in, and it was first just a hoarder home.
Okay.
Wall to wall, stuff that started decaying. It was, you couldn't walk through there. So we were walking on top of all this hoarder stuff. When you get to the back right bedroom, that's where the murder happened. Mm. And so the blood was still spattered on the wall. The bed where she was murdered was still stained with blood, still all there. Nothing had been changed.
Yikes.
The scariest moment was my father is a retired electrician by trade, and we had to go downstairs to check the electrical. Mm-hmm. So when you went down those stairs, it was completely dark. The smell was of several forms of death, whether it be animal, human, whatever. And there were these sets of doors throughout the basement that we had to enter. And going through each door with no electricity on, with flashlights only, it was very scary because we just didn't know what was going to be on those other sides of those doors. And so had to get that home cleaned out. Had to, of course, people say, do you have to disclose those situations? We don't have to disclose those situations legally, but obviously anybody could Google the address and find it out. So, yeah. You know, there were questions about it, and we just handled it very factually. So got that home sold, emptied, sold, completely. Now I actually went back to show one of my buyers about 2 years later when it was back on the market, saw it completely renovated and wanted to see it. We went back in and saw it, and it was stunning.
Wow.
They'd added a third story. They had completed the basement out where it was full walkout. The house was stunning and still is stunning. So that was the creepiest house. And then I had to also list for this family, the guy who's in prison, his parents' house who passed away in the process. Mm. So it was just a really intriguing situation. Very spooky, very scary situation. So that would be my scariest situation.
It almost sounds like we're turning into a murder mystery podcast, and I kind of love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to that story.
But you've got you talked about those two. Do you think it's important to list those kind of homes, or is it you know, something that you would recommend people do? Yeah. Or how do you process that?
Well, I had another situation where someone got shot in the front yard of a home, and they reached out and asked my comfort level, and I said I wasn't comfortable because I knew the person who was shot and killed. And for me, it was an emotional piece. But when it comes to selling homes, I had to call a friend of mine who's actually, believe it or not, president of the National Association of Realtors this year. And he and his firm listed a major New England serial killer that's been made into movies and everything home. And when I called him up, I was like, you know, what are your thoughts on this? And he said, especially in these situations when the news is going to be involved, when there's going to be media, when stories are going to be told, they need to have someone smart who can say the right things, because every seller, no matter their situation, has the right and the right to sell their home with good representation. Mm-hmm. So I kind of took that on as, because when I was listening to this home, it disturbed me. I had to think through these things. But I thought, if WKRN or WSMV is going to reach out and do an interview on this, they need to speak with someone who's not going to be a babbling idiot about it and understands the laws on disclosure. So I have zero issues listing these kind of homes. I listed another home out in West Nashville, just on the Cheatham County line, when I drove up with my dad again to see this home because I heard it was a scary situation. There were some beaten mannequins there from the person's situation. And I won't go deeply into that, but those mannequins were mutilated. It was terrifying to see what had been done to those mannequins. And of course, I was with the sisters in the situation who did not know that the brother had these issues. And they deserved representation.
Yeah.
And I have gone into some of the most, I've gone into homes with people who had fetishes, with dungeons. My first situation, I love your face on that one. My first situation was I just won Rookie of the Year back in 2005 for Greater Nashville Realtors. There was an icon realtor here in town, and she was in her 90s and still selling, but she liked to work with young, upcoming people. So she asked me to list the home with her.
Yeah.
And so I went to Germantown to this home, and the guy was standing there, and she was like, well, what's through this area? And so he gave me these big eyes, real big. And I opened the door and looked, and there was a complete sex dungeon behind that door. Completely black, all this, you know, spooky stuff, fetish stuff. And if you're into that, hey, we love you. No judgment.
Absolutely. We'll sell your home.
We'll absolutely treat you with dignity and respect and all those pieces. And I just, he looked at me all big-eyed on the other side of that door. And I was like, oh, great closet. And I just closed it so the sweet little 90-year-old realtor great wouldn't closet. See it. So we've seen, I got so many stories. It could be just another whole podcast. So
wow.
I could go on, I'll stop.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there's one other place here in Nashville that I'm thinking of specifically that you have talked about. It was almost our office, right?
Well, it was.
Yeah, it was your office. It was almost my office.
Yeah, I mean, and it's at 615 Woodland Street. Uh-huh. It is the Compass East office. I was in the office for 16 years. Megan Manley, who worked with me, we had the attic. And I'm sure she'll listen to this and be like, you told that story, Brian. And she sounds nothing like that. She was like, there is a ghost in that closet. And there was constantly a sense of spirit up there in that attic. And she didn't mind going up there. And she actually thought it was kind of cool to be in there. But she now the people who went up there after us, they felt the spirit presence all the time there. So they were quite mortified. The other things is like, so you feel through these pieces, but also selling homes with graveyards next door. I showed one 2 weeks ago that had a graveyard in the backyard. And then I sold one to a California family that had a graveyard next door to it.
Okay.
And the house had been on the market forever in Franklin, in one of the best neighborhoods. And it sat on the market when things were going like hotcakes. Mm-hmm. And so when I got over there, I said, hey, this guy's got a cemetery next door, and I want to make it very clear they've hit it on the MLS, but it's very clear. And on the Google Street View, you can't see it too well. And they're like, you know, we don't mind that. It's like, we think it's kind of cool. And then, of course, a year later, they had redone a lot of the house, and they wanted to sell it in a not-so-good market. And so I played up the cemetery, and I said, it's got this gorgeous cemetery next door that's an Eagle Scout project that they maintain, and it sold in the first week on the market for much more than they paid for it. So there's ways to even sell graveyard homes, and so, yeah, all kinds of haunted real estate stories are out there, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I've got some haunted stories myself. You know, I went to college in Arkansas, and we'll talk about colleges on an episode soon, probably. College owned a bed and breakfast called the Trotter House, and it was this beautiful old home, two story, four square, you know, very period, very, very period specific to that time. And upstairs, there was rumored to be kids that were ghosts that would run around in the house. And while I was spending time over there playing little jazz sets for guests that would come in and local dignitaries that would come in, because, you know, we're not getting, you know, presidents of leaders of countries and things like that. But we had, you know, presidents from other universities that would maybe come, or Maybe the mayor of another city would come, or the governor of the state would come and would stay at the Trotter House. And so the jazz band that I was in would play shows down there. And you would hear what sounded like kids running around upstairs. And there's no kids in the house at all. And you'd be down on the bottom floor, and you would literally hear the p-p-p-p going down the hallway. So that was pretty unnerving to hear. But right down the street from it was a house called the Allen House.
The what house?
The Allen House. A-L-L-E-N.
A-O-W-L, Al House.
Allen. A-L-L-E-N, Allen House.
Okay.
And the Allen House was the subject of multiple documentaries that aired on all of the TLC and Discovery Channel and all those kind of shows. And it was like every year around Halloween, they would open it up for tours, but it was haunted year-round. And I went and did one of the tours, and you know, lights would turn on and off on their own. Cabinets would open up on their own. There was a rocking chair up in the attic that a little girl who used to live there hundreds of years ago would rock in, and randomly throughout the day, it would just start rocking back and forth. Mm. There was no wind up there, no movement, no airflow. It was truly a real haunted house experience. And you know, I enjoyed going over there, but really it was for me the joy of knowing that, hey, there's something cool in this city that people are talking about, that's made the news, that's been on TV, mm-hmm. that's had shows done about it. So that was my haunted house stories from college.
Well, mine is not haunted necessarily, but growing up, and I've never told this story in public, so here it goes. I've only told it one-on-one, but hey, why not? I was a horrible, fearful kid when I was growing up, meaning horribly scared all the time. I had to sleep. I'd go into mom and dad's room to jump in bed with them. I would lay in bed at night and just shake, scared out of my mind that something was going to come get me. And there, I had this, you know, my twin size bed, and then there was a closet that had a little stair up on it, and one night I'm there and I wake up and there's a man sitting in that closet with this brown hat on. And we sit and talk, and he says, "Brian, it's okay." And I said, "But I'm really scared." He said, "Don't bother your mom and dad. I'm here with you. It's just fine."
Yikes.
And it was peacefully creepy. And so I went back to sleep. The next day, mom was like, "Oh, you didn't come into the bed with us." I'm like, "No. The man at my closet said it was okay." And mom was like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "There was a man there, and he had a brown hat on and said everything was okay." So she went into her closet and pulled out this brown hat. And she goes, "Is it this hat?" I said, "Yeah." And then she went and got a picture of my great-grandfather. And she said, "Is it this man?" I said, "Uh-huh." And she said, "Okay." And we just left it at that.
Wow.
And I can't say we've ever talked about it since.
Wow.
But, you know, you have those situations where it could have been a dream.
Yeah.
Who knows? But that's probably my creepiest story growing up.
Yeah.
You know, having that. And I still remember vividly having the talk with that man. And everybody's going to be like, "Now go get Brian. He's got mental illness issues or
something." No.
But
no.
It's creepy to talk about now.
Well, I've had one story that's kind of like that, where I've felt a presence in the room with me. And it was at least 10 years ago. My life was very different.
Yeah.
I was, you know, not as happy as I am now, was struggling a lot with mental health issues. So it could have been a combination of a bunch of different things.
Right.
But I was, are you familiar with sleep paralysis?
Yeah.
So for those who aren't, sleep paralysis is where on your journey to becoming awake, you stop somewhere at the halfway point between being asleep and awake. And you're aware of yourself, but you can't move. You can't make noise. You're just kind of present, but not really. And one day I woke up and was in this kind of sleep paralysis state. And it was at dusk. So not quite the sun had risen. It was still kind of dark in the room. And I felt this dark presence in the room with me. And I tried to look, but I couldn't move my head, so I could just move my eyes. So I moved my eyes over into the corner of the room, and there was this black figure, this cloaked black figure. And it kind of grew and felt like it was getting closer and closer and closer to me until it was hovering right over me, and I could see these deep red eyes, like blood red eyes. And I wanted to scream, but I couldn't because I had sleep paralysis. I couldn't move at all. I was just there, terrified, petrified. And then my eyes closed, and I opened my eyes again, and it was gone, and I could move, and I had woken back up. But that was probably the only time that I've felt a presence in the room with me, and it was so dark, and it was very, very creepy, and I never want to have that experience again. And I hope I don't, and I hope no one ever has to have that experience again. So,
and let's take a break on that one, and let's let that settle for a while.
Okay.
We'll be back. Lord, we need to take a little break after that one and reclaim. So, you know, we've been talking about kind of real life situations we've had. Let's talk about the fake ones with haunted houses.
Yeah.
You know, because we love a good haunted house. I remember when I was in my 20s, there were, you know, we would literally go haunted house one to the next, to the next, to the next. And my passion from this comes from my family had a haunted forest at our house.
Okay.
So raised over again in that little small town I was talking about, we had this little pathway that Dad would light up because, again, he was an electrician. He could do all this lighting. Mm-hmm. And I remember he dug a grave, and somebody would get in that grave and bring a hand out as people walked over. We had a headless horseman in it. We had a witch in a cauldron. So all the neighbors would come in, and they would dress up. And we probably had 20 stations throughout this haunted woods. And back then, we didn't have insurance or any of those things. We were bringing hundreds of people onto our property when I was in my teens and just going through for free.
Yeah.
And we'd do it like for one night. It would start around, you know, sundown and go till 1 or 2 in the morning. Mm. And it was a big deal because back then there weren't these kind of things out there. And we just had this, you know, made up haunted forest at our house. And so that kind of translated for me as I got older that I just wanted to go to all these haunted places and enjoy haunted woods and haunted houses through here. But one of our absolute favorites is Nashville Nightmare.
Oh yeah. Nashville Nightmares is here in Madison.
Yeah.
I think they might have other branched out to other locations. No, maybe
not that I'm aware of.
No,
no.
Nashville Nightmare is in this, it's in the Madison Square here in Madison, and it is a massive haunted house. I mean, you know, you go into some haunted houses and there's like a theme for the year, and it's like, oh, our theme this year is haunted hayride, or our theme this year is creature from the Black Lagoon. Nashville Nightmare each year has dozens of themed spaces in the haunted house. We went 2 years ago.
Yeah. No, it was last year.
Was it last year?
It was last year.
Well, yeah. Last year we went and then took Esther with us. She wanted to go. Micah did not go, and Dad did not go. And Dad, I don't suspect he'll ever do a haunted house.
Yeah.
Micah, we're still working on trying to convince him to come along with us.
He loves scary movies, but hate haunted houses.
Yeah.
But, you know, going to, you know, we had our podcast about Universal Studios, and we talked about their Fright Night and everything. I think Nashville Nightmare is at that level of quality.
Oh, absolutely.
Both you and I, when we left, said, this is in our hometown of Nashville,
yeah,
and we've never been. I felt bad because it is so high quality. And, you know, given that you and I both wear loops that we put in our ears, if we'll put in the show notes too, a link to those. They're great noise-canceling pieces. And given that I have my loops in, I can handle really good haunted houses now. And these themed areas, they're insanely well done.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one of the spookiest things about Nashville Nightmare that most people don't know is if you know the Tabitha Tudor situation in East Nashville where the child was disappeared from her home over, I think, on Lillian Street in East Nashville, her family is part of the management team for this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the nicest, most kind people in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
And just that extra factor of knowing that disappearance and then they run it as management, it's a very interesting piece there. One that they have this haunted school last year,
yeah,
where you go through that school bus. Then they had, like, my favorite area though was where they had all those lasers and like but the walls only came up to your waist.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a fog that didn't go higher than your waist.
Uh-huh.
And these lasers, so you couldn't see what was below you, but then there was all these monsters crawling around on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Insanely good.
Yeah, it was so good. My favorite was probably the pirate area that they had.
Oh, that was good. I forgot about that.
Because there's like these drawbridges that you have to cross over, and mm-hmm, gangways and planks that you have to walk, and then there's this ship that things are coming out of, and it was really, really good.
And it doesn't look like someone just went to Home Depot with some spray foam and created some crap.
Oh, no.
It is like amazingly well done.
Top of the line. They must have people that are professional set designers working there, because the sets are just incredible. The pieces are all incredible. The costumes are incredible. The actors that they have out there are incredible. There was one, so they've got the main haunted house that you can go in and you pay a ticket price for that. And then there's a secondary haunted house across the parking lot that was like the circus clown thing that we did as well. And we got to go into this one, and we're walking through, and it's like those meat what are they called, the plastic butchers? Flap, yeah, the butcher flaps that come down, that keep cool sections cool, and there's kind of a delineation between spaces. So they had these plastic curtains basically hanging down, and you can't really see behind them because they're pretty opaque. You get into the edge of the circus tent. We're about to walk into the actual circus tent, and like 30 or 40 clowns come running out. Mm-hmm. And some of them have chainsaws and some of them have air horns. And I was petrified because sound for me is, I can get overwhelmed pretty quickly with sound. Thankfully I had my loops, like you said, so that made it a lot easier. But what was so funny to me about the whole experience, though, was Esther.
She was awful. She just wasn't scared.
She didn't react, respond.
She hugged them. She was going up to the actors and hugging them.
Yeah.
And like, we have a picture of her with this humongous, tall, stilted character that looks like the Grim Reaper. And she's like, and they hugged her too.
Yep.
She's just impossible to shake with it.
Yeah.
She loves being scared. Was she not scared? She just loves that whole piece of it.
And poor Esther, while we were walking through it, I would grab Esther and push her forward because I knew that she could take it and she'd get the scare first, and then I could hide behind her and flinch.
Yeah, and then you got Micah, who, we had our theater episode, a few weeks ago, but we got to see Stranger Things on Broadway. And we didn't get to talk about it in that episode, but because we wanted to save it for the Halloween episode. But we were talking about how Micah loves scary movies.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like haunted houses. And when we went to see Stranger Things, I told you, I said, you cannot tell your brother we saw this because he'll be so mad that he didn't get to see, because he's a Stranger Things freak. But during it, after the first 3 minutes, I was like, thank God Micah didn't come to this. Yeah.
No way he could have made it through. I have not screamed that loud probably ever in my life.
Let's go step back. There's a point in the show. There's several points in the show. It's the scariest thing I've ever seen live on stage. The hair was sticking up on me. I don't have. It was so scary. And there's a point that gets so scary
in the first act.
In the first act, and during intermission, the six rows in front of us turned around and said, "Oh, you're the one that screamed." It wasn't just that he screamed. He banshee'd. It was
blood-curdling.
Blood-curdling scream because it was so intense.
Yeah.
And everybody like, but Zach really went over the top. And
I wasn't prepared, and I was truly terrified. I truly was terrified. That was probably one of the greatest Broadway shows I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot.
Yeah.
The set, it won the Tony for light design. It won the Tony for sound design. It was Tony nominated for best actor. The kid who plays the lead is phenomenal. The way he acts is phenomenal. But y'all, the way they've got stuff happening on stage, I don't want to say too much because it's really something I want people to experience. Yeah. But something we had talked about is that the budget it must have taken to put this together is got to be so high that it's inconceivable to us how they would take this show on the road. Yeah, there would have to be changes to it.
Yeah.
There would have to be changes.
But the monsters in it are scary. And usually you think, oh, that's so cheesy. No, not in these situations. There are special effects that make you jump like beyond belief. The first 5 minutes alone, which it's just a sea ship scene. Uh-huh. You don't think it's military. You don't think that could be scary. It is mortifying.
Yeah. And they have this ship that's a set piece that 1 minute it's there, and then the stage goes dark, and then like 3 seconds later, all the lights come back on, and there is a giant ship. I'm not talking, not a boat, a ship, like a military ship that they've gotten on the stage somehow. It's incredible.
Yeah, so if you get to New York and you want to see Stranger Things, if you have any openings, go see Stranger Things. It's usually on the day of tickets up there, so go see it. So now, let's talk a little bit about our Halloween traditions and some of the things that we've done through time here.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's take another short break.
Cool. We'll be right back.
Sorry about that quick break. I needed to take a little break. So let's talk a little bit about our traditions. And I think we have a new tradition, hopefully, with things that happen at Epic Universe.
Yeah. So when we went to Epic Universe, there is this land in Epic Universe that is entirely dedicated to the monsters of the Universal world. So think Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, the creature from the Black Lagoon. There's probably some others that I'm missing as well. But that space was so cool. It's this dark space. We talked about it in the epic episode.
The universe episode.
The universal episode. I would love for us to go back there again around Halloween time and experience that for sure.
It's beautiful, beautiful, beautifully done. And just again, that fear. I was watching a video today of it, and it was in sunlight again, as you brought out the other episode about how it's so well done. And then, so hopefully that will become a tradition for us. And then, of course, we have our hay rides every year.
Yep.
Micah kind of has started this tradition where he brings all of his friends over. It was usually close to Halloween. Now we've had to move it earlier. We hook up our hay bale. What's the thing I'm looking for?
The trailer.
The trailer. That's what it's called. I was thinking hailer.
Yeah.
I was mixing hailer and trailer together. Yeah. Hay and trailer together. Our trailer up onto our truck or to the tractor. And we put all kinds of hay in, and then we just take the kids out around our farm. And we have a cemetery on our farm. Mm-hmm. And so as we do that pathway, they start through the fence, they go back to the grave. We have probably 5 to 7 people who come. You've been one of those people, obviously, yeah, to be a jump scare for the kids. Then we go over to the barn, have a jump scare there. Then we have a treehouse chapel on the property and a pond. There's a scare there. And then we have this little area that's a tree alcove that you can't see anything in. That's one of our jump zones we usually put the chainsaws in. And then we have this weird little witch's cauldron that's been at the house forever. And it's in the ground. And it's not a witch's cauldron, but it looks like one. And we put dry ice in there and everything. So
yeah,
we always have the Halloween pre-hayride that the kids absolutely love.
And the greenhouse, too, is part of that.
Oh, yeah. The greenhouse is part of that.
Yeah. So when you think about Nashville, what are some of the best spots around the city to trick-or-treat?
There are so many. Honestly, I think on certain, like if you're in the burbs, you're for Gallatin, Hendersonville, Franklin, there's tons of subdivisions that pretty much close down. And there's amazing trick-or-treating in almost every subdivision in the suburbs in Nashville. So let's talk about the urban core specifically, because I'm going to talk about probably 3 places because there's so many. So number one for me on this list, let me start with number 3. Number 3 on the list for me would be historic Richland, down Richland and Central Street. This is in 37205 off of West End. You're going to get some amazing decor on these houses. There's one that puts a huge spider on the front of their house. And we're talking, these are $3 and $4 million homes. And so it's just a beautiful trick-or-treat experience. It's a tree-lined street with sidewalks, not a hard walk at all. You're not going to get hardly any traffic in that area because it's not a thoroughfare. So that would be my number 3 place to trick-or-treat in Nashville. My number 2 place to trick-or-treat in Nashville is Sylvan Park.
Okay.
Any of the streets that are named after states, any of the numbered streets from 42 all the way up to 51st, great trick-or-treating. My brother and sister-in-law lived on 42nd. Back in the day, and then they lived on one of the state streets. We would have, so if you're living over there and you love to have trick-or-treaters, you're going to get a ton in Sylvan Park. Plenty of walking, lots of sidewalks, lots of decor, and just a great place to go trick-or-treating. They also sometimes do a scavenger hunt for the kids too.
Okay.
And that starts pretty early during the daylight.
Nice.
So if you're part of that neighborhood association, they'll put that out. But my number one place to go trick-or-treating in Nashville would be East Nashville's historic Edgefield and Lachlan Springs.
Okay. Why's that?
Because if you're driving down Fatherland, during the Halloween season, they put these arches up over the sidewalks, and they alternate green, purple, orange. And many of the neighbors have now, and it's all neighborhood driven. So they put them out on their sidewalks. So literally, the sidewalk's lined with these arches that are just amazing. And then there's a house we love to go by. We were playing, how we always play Halloween music, open up this sunroof on the vehicle,
yeah,
and just drive down the streets. And the houses are just decorated unbelievably well. My favorite one's there on Fatherland.
Yeah.
So that would be number one for me, East Nashville. But then when we go into Lachlan Springs, along Eastland, there's houses and along Chapel that have gone all out with their decorations. There's a Wizard of Oz house, and they've got Dorothy and the Tin Man, all these pieces. When you go down Chapel, if you turn south, off of Eastland and go south on East on Chapel, as you're going to Rose Pepper Cantina, you're going to see tons of houses decorated there. And then people are just walking around, with drinks and just being neighbors. So I think the neighborly piece of East Nashville puts it at the number one spot for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not big on trick or treating myself, but I do go out with us every time that we all go out as a family. So, love those tips for people listening, looking for places in Nashville to go trick-or-treating. There's some great options here in the city, and they give out good candy too.
Oh yeah. And there's some people, they put signs out that say we give out full size candy bars,
right,
in Sylvan Park.
Or little trial sizes of Jenny's ice cream. I've seen that given out too in the city. So those are always fun. So let's play our Nashville spooky edition of Nashville Rathers.
Yay. And it's my turn to give to you because you got the last one. So today's Nashville Rathers will be horror themed. Horror. I've had to teach Micah that horror has two syllables, not one, because he's been putting one syllable in horror.
Uh-huh.
So in today's horror rather for you, here are your choices today.
Okay.
Would you rather have to sleep for a full night, one night only, and right before you go to bed, ants are poured all over you to crawl all night long? Or you have a tube that goes in your mouth for oxygen, but you are buried alive for 5 minutes.
Oh, buried alive.
Really?
Absolutely buried alive. I do not like the sensation of things crawling on me, being on me at all. I love the dirt because I'm a gardener. So I think I could handle the dirt, especially because it's just for 5 minutes. But ants crawling all over me at night, no thank you, not at all.
So I probably should have upped the stakes. So I was trying to, I made it 5 minutes with no breathing tube because I figured you would absolutely not do it any other way. But should have upped those.
You should have upped the ante on that a little bit.
Okay, well then you give me one since we got more time with this.
So would you rather go trick-or-treating in East Nashville or trick-or-treating in Sylvan Park?
Well, I think I just answered that one.
Yep.
So I think that's a pretty obvious answer. I would absolutely go with trick-or-treating in East Nashville. I love how houses have started really decorating for Halloween. Mm-hmm. There's one in on I think it's Riverwood in Inglewood. I love driving by it. They do a full opening. I mean, you can go by there during the days and they'll say hello to you, but they've got their fences out. They've got their gravestones up. It's just an amazing experience. So East Nashville all day, every day. But Sylvan Park obviously is a close second. So that's it. So when you think about dressing up, do you like dressing up like more scary or do you like dressing up more fun?
Or
what would you rather dress up?
You know, I don't think this is scary.
No.
I don't think the Harry Potter stuff that I do is scary. For me, it's more about character embodiment. I like to become a character, become a different persona for the Halloween season. I will say during my college years, I was recruited by the pastor of the church that I was attending for the week of Halloween to dress up as the devil.
Oh.
And to roam around the congregation during his message on Sunday trying to distract people because his message was on distractions. And so I went to this Halloween superstore and got this latex devil mask that I had to glue down to my face and had red face paint and body paint. And the full regalia was dressed up as Satan himself. And was crawling around in the baptistry, peeking my head out, trying to distract people. There was this one man, older man, who had been going to the church for a long time. And he always sat on like the second or third row. And he fell asleep that day. And so I went and just sat next to him and just looked at him for a long time while he was there sleeping. And everybody was tickled pink by it. But that's probably one of my favorite Halloween memories.
I've never heard of a church doing that. I know that they would do things called the Gates of Hell growing up, and they would like scare people to not go to hell and that kind of thing.
Those were fun. Those were really fun productions to be a part of if you're on the hell side.
Well, so I didn't see that Halloween favorite memory coming from you. My favorite Halloween memory, it's not my favorite, but one of my most disturbing ones. My brother was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout, and we would hold the Boy Scout haunted house, and they had a Mad Butcher and a cakewalk. And the Mad Butcher came after me, and I hid under the table, and he'd take his machete and try to get. And back then, you know, they would touch you. You know, nowadays nobody touches you at these haunted places. But he was grabbing me, and I was probably 6 or 7. He's trying to pull me out from under the table, and the joy of it. And after they had a cakewalk, and if you know what a cakewalk is, it's where they play music, and when it stops, whoever's on the number gets the cake. Uh-huh. They got the fat boy from out under that table by letting me do the cakewalk and letting me win. So they were like, my mom was like, if you get out from under that table, we'll let you win the cakewalk. So I got a cake from that. So that's probably my favorite Halloween memory. And, you know, that's what I love about Halloween. It's all about stories. And I think today, I've not heard these stories from you, and you haven't heard them from me.
That's
but,
right.
You know, I hope as you're listening, you share your stories with each other in your own home. I mean, when you have dinner tonight, talk about your favorite stories from Halloween. Have some conversation, because we haven't shared these stories, and they're so fun to have.
Yeah, especially when you're able to laugh together while you're telling the stories. You know, Halloween is sometimes about scary stories. It's oftentimes about scary stories, but it's also important to tell stories with one another and to one another that create deeper bonds that you can laugh about. So,
and so email us, send us some Instagram messages, tell us your favorite scary stories. If you're in real estate, tell us some homes that you've listed that are scary. If you have some stories from your childhood that are kind of creepy, we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, tag us in your Halloween costumes.
Yeah, we want to see those. Probably can't share those stories this year because the Halloween season will be over, but we'll be doing this next year too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, thanks for listening in. We'll see you next time on Nashville and Beyond, the podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute legal, financial, or real estate advice. Listeners should always consult licensed professionals for guidance specific to their situation. Brian and Zach Copeland are licensed real estate agents with Compass 615-522-5100. Kevin Kennerson, MLS number 171733 with Lemmingham Mortgage, is the executive producer. Engineer Mike Reeves. Music Dusty Boots by Ecoleaks. Nashville and Beyond. Copyright 2025.